Good morning. How are we doing this morning? It's always good on a potluck Sunday. It's been a busy weekend for me and my family. Graduation for Haley. Then we had a party yesterday, thanks to you who were able to come and celebrate that with us. We had the most delicious cupcakes with bugs on them. And they were great. The rest of my family is going to another graduation. We have a niece who's graduating in the Mount Shasta area. So they took off early this morning and left me at home by myself. So here I am. It's a joy for me to share this time together with brothers and sisters searching the scriptures. Last week we talked about faith lessons. The disciples were learning faith lessons on the Sea of Galilee, and we talked about how that stress of the storms on the lake, it's similar to the stress that comes into our lives, and those stressful situations in life can reveal to us what's going on in our hearts, what's taking place there. What are we really holding on to? What are we really trusting in? So I don't do this very often because I'm not very good at it, but I'm going to try my best. I'm going to bother you with a Greek word this morning. And that word is athumazen. I didn't know it before this week, so hey, don't worry about it. But it is a Greek word that means to amaze or shock someone and to cause them to marvel. So you read the Gospels and this word pops up quite regularly. Jesus constantly shocked and amazed people. Do you remember some stories, though, of when Jesus was shocked or amazed? Two times that I found in the New Testament that people actually shocked Jesus. They amazed him. Jesus amazed people all the time, but this were the two times that people amazed Jesus himself. And we're going to look at those times this morning because it had something to do, both of those times, with people's faith. So we'll start in Mark, the sixth chapter. Jesus left that part of the country and returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. And the next Sabbath, he began teaching in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. And they asked, "Where did he get all of this wisdom and the power to perform such miracles?" So Jesus' hometown peeps, his hometown homies, they recognize what? He's got wisdom. He's got power. At least some of them who listened to Jesus as he talked, it says they were amazed. And it's that same Greek word, shocked, amazed. They were amazed enough that they had to figure out how to hold the tension between the boy that they knew from before and this man who was before them now, who had such wisdom and power. And they scoffed. "He's just a carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. And his sisters live right here among us." And they were deeply offended and refuse to believe in him. They've heard the stories of the miracles. They have heard the wisdom that comes from Jesus. And yet there's a level of familiarity with the family that they refuse to believe. Jesus, he had a normal job, a builder, carpenter, normal job. He came from a pretty normal family. His sisters, in fact, they live a block away. In other words, they think about it and realize, wait a minute, he's just a regular guy like the rest of us. It's also a bit strange in the text that they refer to Jesus as Mary's son instead of Joseph's son, because typically in that culture, even if a father had already passed away, you would still refer to the son by his father's name. So it's possible that this statement, son of Mary, it could have been derogatory in some way. Maybe someone knew something about Jesus's unusual paternal circumstances and had jumped to certain conclusions about that. But behind the assumption, hey, wait a minute, this is just a normal guy, lie another assumption that God doesn't use normal people like us. He doesn't choose real, regular people just like us. And it's interesting because behind that assumption, that's pretty much the opposite of every story that we read about in the scriptures. It seems to me that God delights in using everyday people, regular circumstances and regular people, to accomplish his extraordinary purposes and will. So they quickly arrive at the conclusion, you know, hey, wait a minute, we know this guy. Is this a trick? But more likely, this is a kind of particular jealousy that can creep into to hearts. Who does he think he is? Parading around like he's something special. Have you ever heard this phrase before? There's a truth to this. That's why we have this phrase, and that's why most of us would recognize this. That sometimes the people that are closest to us, we can feel almost a certain disregard for them, a contempt or a kind of jealousy. Who do they think they are? I'm just as important as they are. I'm just as good as they are. In fact, I know I could do a better job than so-and-so. If I just had a chance, I would. Well, you see that in this text, a certain kind of heart is being revealed. Then Jesus told them, a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family, and because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. So this is a negative sense of amazement. He's amazed at how hard the hearts were of the people who knew him best, who refused to believe. They are, in fact, offended at him and unwilling to believe. And his very own people had so little faith in Jesus that it really shocked him. He's shocked because their hearts were closed to him and to the work of God through him. And so the second story we look at this morning is where he finds rejection from those who should have been his greatest supporters. Now, the second story of amazement, Jesus finds faith among those who have very little to do with Jesus himself or the people of God. Because this faith is manifested from someone in the military, from someone of another race, another country. He's not even necessarily friendly to the Jewish people, the occupier who's come. It's the story of a faith of a Roman centurion. When Jesus returned to Capernaum, a Roman officer came and pleaded with him, "Lord, my young servant lies in bed, paralyzed and in terrible pain." And Jesus said, "Well, I will come and heal him." But the officer said, "Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come into my home. But just say the word where you are, and my servant will be healed. I know this because I am under the authority of my superior officers, and I have authority over my soldiers. I only need say, go, and they go, or come, and they come. And if I say to my slaves, do this, they do it." The soldier understands that. And those who are under your command. Maybe it doesn't even have to say a word. Sometimes it can be like, and they suddenly have the attention of the people that they want to get things done, to get done. Go, come, do this, and it's done. When Jesus heard this, he was shocked. The same word. He was amazed. Turning to those who followed him, he said, "I tell you the truth, I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel. And I tell you this, that many Gentiles will come from all over the world, from the east and west, and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and feast in the kingdom of heaven. But many Israelites, those for whom the kingdom was prepared, will be thrown into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus turned and he said to the Roman officer, "Go back home. Because you believed, it has happened." And the young servant was healed that same hour. Matthew 8:13. Can you contrast these two stories in your mind? Faith that shocks Jesus. Unfaith, or a refusal to believe, that shocks Jesus. See, this Gentile soldier, he understood something about the way that power and authority, the way they work. And the soldier's faith amazed Jesus because he could see in Jesus that something that Jesus' own people could not see or consider or entertain. Namely, that Jesus isn't just the servant doing the miracles. He's not just the soldier carrying out the commander's business. He's also the guy calling the shots. The Roman centurion had the faith to see that Jesus was the one behind everything, not just doing it, but the power behind it, the power that was moving all of the pieces. And so the Roman soldier, he doesn't need Jesus to go anywhere. He doesn't need Jesus to do anything. Because he understands where power is. And if this guy just says the word, that's enough for me. Because I'm not worthy of someone this important. He just has to clear his throat, wave his hand, say the word. And this centurion trusts that it will be done. Can you see the contrast in these kinds of hearts? Can you see the contrast of this faith versus unfaith or a closed heart? So Jesus faced hard hearts all the time. What sign will you give us to prove to us? There's just a few that I looked at. One day the Pharisees and Sadducees came to test Jesus, demanding that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove his authority. Amaze us, and we'll follow you. Prove yourself to us. Show us a miraculous sign if you want us to believe in you. What can you do? Trying to get another free meal from Jesus. It's pretty nice when he multiplies the loaves and fishes and we don't even have to go looking for it. And then another story, Luke's account of Jesus' rejection at Nazareth. Everyone spoke well of him and was amazed by his gracious words that came from his lips. This is right before they try to kill him and throw him over a cliff. How can this be, they asked. Isn't this Joseph's son? Then Jesus said to them, you will undoubtedly quote from me this proverb, physician, heal yourself, meaning do miraculous things here in your hometown like those you did in Capernaum. Amaze me, Jesus, and I'll follow you. Show me the fireworks from heaven, Lord, and I'll do whatever you want. What sign will you give us to prove yourself to us is very different than just say the word and it'll be enough. That's a different kind of heart. That's a different kind of faith. God, if you show me something amazing, if you prove yourself to me, then I will. We all want to hear this amazing voice of the Lord. No, we don't really, because then we're responsible for it. Well, I come and I do my... What keeps you from going all in for your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? Where has familiarity started to breed contempt? Oh, it's just... And you can't hear with a heart of faith anymore. You don't expect anything to change. You're just going through the motions. Well, the Lord knows I'm here, and if he needs me, he can... Versus a heart that is waiting, just hoping. Hoping for a gesture. ready to pounce and do the will of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And by the way, those words have already been spoken to us. Every word that we need. Go and make disciples. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened. We don't go. We don't come. What's wrong with our faith? What more are you waiting for? Faith, true faith. It gives clarity, it gives stability, it gives assurance. It helps us mitigate the difficult, hard, horrible circumstances of our life. With a heart of faith, you pick up on things. You become attentive to things that other people will miss. A hard heart or a lack of faith, it clouds things. It blurs things. It closes ears from hearing and shuts eyes from seeing. It is impossible to please God without faith, and anyone who wants to come to Him must believe that God exists and that He rewards those who sincerely or diligently or earnestly seek Him. You got to go after it with your whole heart. Well, that's the sermon. Can you tell me what the sermon was about? I hope it was clear enough, but I want to test your hearing this morning. And I'm going to test your hearing the same way that Jesus tested people's hearing. See, when Jesus' word comes to people, that word filters through and it sorts out people's hearts. And you had to be all in to get the depth of what. And sometimes people weren't all in, and that word would come. It was just a little itch there. Sometimes the word of the Lord comes to us as a little annoying itch that we can't quite scratch. And we finally have to pay attention to it. Can you tell me what this sermon is about? I'm going to tell you a parable to explain this sermon. That's what we're going to do to close this morning. This hearing test for the heart. Helen, I'm given a hearing test, but it's for the heart, not the ears. And if you want to think about it, and if you want to come ask me questions about it, and you want to try to wrestle with me to figure this out, you come talk to me later, but I know that most of you won't because you don't care enough. Or maybe you're embarrassed to kind of try to guess and get it wrong, or... And I'm just going to close with this sermon. So we always offer an invitation in this church. If you need prayers, you can find me up front here, and our congregation will pray for you. If you want to put the Lord on in baptism and begin that journey of discipleship, we always make a time for that too. So there's the invitation. But I'm inviting now for you to listen with your heart. Jim, you're going to be shocked because this story is just going to end and it's going to take you 10 minutes to get up here and get things going. So you may want to come up here now because no one's going to be ready for this story to end when it ends. All right, have I built it up enough? So here's your hearing test. Joe Wrigley was an American infantryman who served in the First World War. And he landed in the trenches of Northern Europe as a 17-year-old with a rifle, a few rounds of ammunition, a couple tins of food, and an extra pair of dry socks, which were very important in trench warfare. After days of a brutal artillery bombardment, whistles blew, and the young Joe Wrigley, along with the rest of his battalion, charged the German trenches. And they were successful in capturing a small portion of the German defenses, and while exploring a German bunker, Joe came across a fine porcelain tea set. There's a number of things that seemed oddly out of place in a wartime bunker. There was a smashed phonograph. There were broken tables and chairs, an upholstered couch that was broken apart, some shelves, even a framed family photo precariously hanging on the wall. But everything was smashed and destroyed and broken, except one thing. Looking closer, Joe was surprised to discover in the midst of the wreckage there was an intact porcelain teapot. Joe was curious how a porcelain teapot could survive when everything around it was destroyed, and without much thought, he unceremoniously picked it up and threw it in his backpack and moved on. Later, back at camp, Joe dumped out his backpack, and he had forgotten the teapot was even in there. And after it clanked and hit the ground, Joe stared at it for a moment. Then he picked up the teapot and examined it closely. There wasn't a chip or a scratch on it. It was curious to Joe that such a seemingly fragile thing could survive the horrors of trench warfare. But then Joe had the thought, I might as well use it while I can. So every day he made multiple pots of tea for himself and his friends. And every time Joe's unit was sent out, he would unceremoniously throw the teapot back in his backpack, knowing that it was only a matter of time before that thing would break or his own life would be taken. And off he marched into combat in all kinds of brutal fighting situations, the kind of things that break most men, not to mention a teapot. But the teapot didn't break. And Joe kept on using it every day, rain or shine, artillery, gas, grenades, tanks, machine gun fire. That teapot was with Joe. Other men in the platoon would go out, and many of them wouldn't come back, but Joe and his teapot kept coming back. And so the legend grew of Private Joe Wrigley and his lucky teapot. And this went on month after month after month before a peace treaty was finally signed and the First World War drew to a close. And Joe was glad to leave the battlefields of Europe behind him, and he took his teapot home with him. Something that seemed so fragile, and yet this teapot, along with him, had survived the First World War without a scratch. And so Joe Wrigley made his way back to the family farm in the Midwest, and he started farming, and he thought to himself, I don't have a use for anything that's not practical. So if you're going to be my teapot, you're going to be a working teapot. And he used that teapot every day. He'd make a top pot of tea before he'd head out in the fields to do his farm work. Well, Joe got married, and he had kids. And the kids learned his dad's stories about the teapot that he had gotten out of that German bunker. The kids watched their dad use that teapot every day. Well, after 30 years, Joe passed the teapot on to his grown oldest son, William Wrigley, who everyone called Bill. And Bill Wrigley told his kids the stories of Grandpa Joe's teapot. But the difference was Bill didn't use the teapot every day like his dad did. He just used it occasionally for special purposes, special family meals. When he knew Dad was coming over to be with the family for the holidays, then he would pull the teapot out. Well, more years passed, and eventually Bill gave the teapot to his oldest son, who was also named William, but everyone called him Willie. Willie grew up listening to the stories of Grandpa Joe's teapot, but Willie himself had no practical use for that teapot. It was no longer a daily use teapot. It was no longer a special occasion teapot. Rather, that teapot was a dusty prop on the top shelf of the kitchen. Everyone in the family knew the stories of Grandpa Joe's porcelain teapot. And various family members with smiles and laughter, they would tell fond stories about the teapot displayed on the top shelf. They would point to the teapot, but no one used the teapot anymore. It had been a lot of years since anyone had actually made a pot of tea in that teapot. Well, Willie had a family of his own, and he had a son named Joey. Joey was named after his great-grandfather, Joe. And one Thanksgiving, the family gathered and they enjoyed the meal together. And as they sat around the table, the family told stories about the indestructible teapot. The kids listened to these stories that had become a family legend. Legends tend to grow over time. The teapot that saved great-grandpa Joe's life. It deflected a German sniper's bullet. And another family member chimed in. And I remembered that not once, but twice, that porcelain teapot was dropped on the tile floor. Not a scratch. There's not a scratch on it. And they motioned toward the kitchen, where somewhere in a dark corner up above cabinet somewhere was a dusty, unused teapot. And as they told these stories, great-grandpa Joe Wrigley, he just looked at the floor with not very much interest. Well, that young boy, Joey, he asked his father, Willie, if he could hold great-grandpa's teapot. And he asked, can we make some tea in it? And Willie replied to young Joey, no, the teapot's way too important for that. Sometime later, the entire family was gathered in the driveway to take a family picture and say their goodbyes before everyone left. And everyone was looking around to make sure that all the kids were there for the photo. And then someone said, "Where's Joey?" And at that very moment, the family heard the window of the bonus room above the garage open. And Joey leaned out of the window, young Joey, holding great-grandpa Joe's teapot. And the family screamed with shock and horror, "No! Joey, no!" It's like one of those Bounty commercials, the paper towels where they... Has anyone else seen those commercials? There's a spill, and like suddenly everything is in slow motion. No! And everyone was in shock and horror. But it was too late. That porcelain teapot slipped from that young boy's hand. And everyone was horrified. And that pot was falling through the air. No one knew what to do. It was too late. But there was one family member who reacted very differently. Great-grandpa Joe wasn't watching the teapot at all. He was looking at the expression on his great-grandson's face. And he saw the look on his face, that young boy's face, and he saw the gleam in that young boy's eye. And old Joe Wrigley smiled. And tears came to his eye. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Let's stand and sing.